Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brian Weber on CBS Sports Radio.
It is the final hour of the program, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family? Rocket can. I'm Brian Weber. I appreciate you spending time with us here on CBS Sports Radio, the fabulous simulcast on CBS Sports Network. And the team has been nimble today. Even Garrett Ritz awoke from a slumber, mostly because I was yelling with about 7 minutes to go prior to going on the air. That's when the Soto to San Diego story broke. So, if you're just joining us, I'll give you the game plan for the final hour of the program with instant analysis of Soto going to the Padres on this, the deadline day in Major League Baseball for trades to occur prior to the deadline of 6 p.m. Eastern. And if you're a real stickler, they'll let a couple minor moves past the deadline, so long as the paperwork is filed. Joe Sheehan, JoeSheehan.com, Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter, joins us in 40 minutes to address the mega deal on Soto going from the Nats to the Padres. I'll jump into this final hour of the program with more thoughts on that blockbuster. In addition to that, and I am tracking what other television shows are addressing, and I'm not surprised, many are leading this hour with the NFL breaking news that occurred at 12:20 Eastern time. So we had, in the span of 30 minutes, two sizable stories. Beyond that, still waiting for the league to decide, are they going to appeal Deshaun Watson's six-game suspension that was handed down yesterday? A reminder, the league has until 9 a.m. Eastern on Thursday to make that decision. But we found out about an hour and a half ago, and I don't think this is just a coinkydink, a day after the Deshaun Watson suspension came out, and a lot of people are unhappy with Watson only being forced to miss six games. And we'll talk more about how that decision was made by former federal judge Sue Robinson, its validity, and the implications of, is this a new precedent and what the league's going to do. But all of that happened yesterday, and then this morning here on the West Coast, coming to you from Jim's Regal studio, just past noon Eastern, the NFL announcing that the Dolphins have been stripped of their first-round draft pick next year. Their owner, Stephen Ross, fined $1.5 million, suspended through October 17th for tampering with both Tom Brady and Sean Payton. That's the headline, and I understand that it's a challenge for editors to come up with a summary of the story. To me, though, the word tanking is not in there, and that's the more interesting takeaway. The league found no evidence to support the allegations from former Dolphin head coach Brian Flores, who's suing the team. No validation of his claims that tanking was the plan for the Dolphins, and he was offered $100,000 from Stephen Ross to lose games in 2019. So to me, while anytime Tom Brady's name is in a headline, with Tom Brady getting ready to celebrate his 45th birthday tomorrow, he is the Benjamin Button of the National Football League. How does he look younger? I think because Ritt gets older by the day, somehow Brady gets younger. There's a weird portrait hanging up in the back of the lavish studios here in Southern California. So Brady turns 45 tomorrow. Anytime Brady's in the news, it's going to be dominating the news cycle. We love the draft so much that the Dolphins being Dr. First Round pick next year is notable. But from where I'm sitting, the headline should be no league finding of tanking by the Dolphins. Now, it doesn't mean the lawsuit is done by Brian Flores. I'm sure he's got his own investigators, part of his legal team. But from the league's point of view, they found no evidence that the Dolphins intentionally lost games. And the most significant conversation that allegedly occurred between Brian Flores when he was the head coach and Dolphin owner Stephen Ross with others in the room came down to that quid pro quo allegedly, that the league finds no substance to back it up, that Ross offered him $100,000 to lose games. $100,000 for every loss that season. I'll just put a footnote on this, and then we'll get to Soto and Deshaun Watson. I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome. If you want to hop aboard, 1-800-636-8686. More of your tweets coming up. BW Weber. Weber with two B's in 15 minutes. We'll talk college football. And then in a half hour, back to the baseball conversation with Joe Sheehan of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. The money quote from this league statement, beyond Roger Goodell going with some very stern language, quote, "The investigators found tampering violations of unprecedented scope and severity." Okay, if it's that heinous, why is it only a first-round pick and a future third-round pick in 2024? What's the answer? Because the league really doesn't care about tampering. Because it goes on all the time. How many times do we talk about it in the NBA with the Brunson investigation and what's going on with the Sixers? There's a legal tampering period now in free agency that the NFL monetizes on NFL Network. But because they had to have this investigation and because they wanted the perception that they were thorough in their analysis, they had to come up with something. I think it's also to distract those of us lucky enough to clutch a microphone to stop talking about Deshaun Watson for a while and jump on the, well, Tom Brady speculation. And if I was a bigger hack than I am, I would have played the what-if game. What if Brady had gone to Miami in 2019? How would the future be different? Dot, dot, dot. So there is all you need to know about the Miami situation. Flores is going to continue his legal battle. Sean Payton will say nothing, I'm sure, other than, well, the phone rings, you take a call, because he's just hanging out this year making TV money, waiting for Big Mike McCarthy to be pushed through the door. They're going to have to butter his hips to get him out of the facility in Dallas. Sean's not going to do anything to rile up the league, especially with his bounty gate past. So if you're doing the next Sean Payton movie with Kevin James trying to play Sean Payton, Kevin James should be playing Big Mike McCarthy in the barn, schmoozing his way into getting the Dallas head coaching job. Sean Payton now has on his resume bounty gate and let's call it tampering gate, although he only took an incoming call apparently from Miami, and it's their owner Stephen Ross who's going to pay the price. Couple more thoughts on Juan Soto. And I can't believe I've talked this much baseball, primarily because I'm energized. And years ago, when baseball was the foundation of my career, I loved the trade deadline. That was the same era in which I would spend countless hours doing weekend radio, going through all-star game snubs and having a lot of outrage. The world has changed, and we just don't care about baseball from a national perspective the way we used to. But when you have a deal of this magnitude happening on the actual day of the trade deadline and involves a superstar and he's not going to the Yankees, they never came up, but you know what I'm saying here, not going to the usual suspects, in this case, not the Dodgers, because according to reports, Soto's destination came down to a handful of teams. The Cardinals were in the hunt, the Dodgers, and ultimately the San Diego Padres got him. And what are they getting? A five-tool player who's only 23 years old, one of the best hitters already in all of baseball, who turned down, reportedly, and it seems rather straightforwardly leaked by the Nats, turned down that 15-year contract for $440 million, mostly, it would seem, to make Soto seem greedy on his way out the door and to appease the fan base who's already thinking, we have lost Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Max Scherzer, Trey Turner. We kept Strasburg, but he's damaged goods. And a player with Hall of Fame potential. I'm not putting him in Cooperstown at the age of 23. But if you track baseball, we saw it again last night. Soto taking Scherzer deep. His 21st home run in what will be his last game wearing a national uniform. Players like this are rarely on the move, especially in their early 20s. And with the added magnitude, he can't hit free agency until after the 2024 season. So the Padres now want to be a factor in the wild card. They've got Soto. this October, along with Machado and the return of Fernando Tatis Jr. That's coming up. They got him next October and the following October. They got plenty of time to court him and make him feel like he is part of the foundation for a team that is not going to just hand the Dodgers the control of baseball on the West Coast every year. So I am pleased as a baseball fan. I still watch the game when I can tolerate it. I also have an issue with every baseball announcer now just being so generic. I'm trying to watch the All-Star game, and I don't have to name names because, look, I am a 52-year-old guy with a sciatica keeping my knee up at a good angle so I can belt out the hits for the final hour of the program. I'm well aware of my limitations physically and what's happened in my career. But I have strong preferences when it comes to announcing style. And if you're going to do an All-Star game, can you be mildly entertaining? But that's baseball now because it's become so formulaic. And I'm not saying it's got to be Harry Carey slurping down a tall boy going to the sixth inning. But baseball has become so formulaic in just about every element, especially on the field, because it's all analytics all the time. And we know, because we can quantify everything, that we're fascinated with exit velo and spin rates. I just want to see the ball in play. I want to have a sense of strategy. Yeah, I want bunts, and I want stolen bases, and I know none of those things are relevant. But beyond that, I want other teams beyond the Yankees and the Dodgers to be in the hunt. So I'm pleased San Diego made this move, as they now enhance their postseason possibilities. And as importantly, and probably more significantly, they blocked the Dodgers from getting another star. Because we should have more stories around the league. The whole point of baseball is it's played every freaking day with 25-man rosters. Do the math. 162. Rick, get out your abacus. 162 plus a 25-man roster. That's a lot of stories. But what do we talk about in baseball all the time? Because I'm guilty of it as well. If I'm talking baseball on a national platform, I'm talking the Dodgers, I'm talking the Yankees and the Mets with Max Scherzer. Last night, giving up the home run to Juan Soto. And Jacob deGrom getting set to come back to the Mets tonight. And Aaron Judge continues just to obliterate the baseball. Home run number 43. Do we care nationally, though? Then we'll talk about that more tomorrow, because I'll have the fallout from the trade deadline. Let us wrap up this compelling, he said with conviction, monologue to start the final hour of the program with a few more thoughts on Deshaun Watson. And if I can be totally upfront with you, I am pleased that we had both the Juan Soto trade and the Dolphins tampering gate story develop organically, because I felt a responsibility, and I take this seriously, I hope you know. I take myself way too seriously, but I want to make sure that I live up to the brand equity of a program that Jim took to new heights decades ago, and we're doing our best not to burn it all down while he's enjoying lake life and another big breakfast with Woody in Wisconsin. I did not want to do 3 hours of Deshaun Watson analysis. I find the entire subject to be unseemly, gross in more human terms. But because the NFL has decided, and this was Roger Goodell trying to forge his early legacy, they are now in the law and order business. We wander into these topics, which, if I'm going to be transparent, and I'm speaking about myself, but many of my colleagues, I don't think we're well equipped to handle this kind of conversation at Sports Talk Radio, where we bottom line everything, winners and losers. And I'll raise my hand and be guilty of that once more. I just gave you the six games that Watson is going to miss and ran through the possibilities of Jacoby Brissett, who is nothing more than a middling starter. 37 career starts, 14-23, small sample size with the Patriots, the longer fill-ins in Indy when Andrew Luck was injured, then retired, and five starts last year for Tua Tagovailoa in Miami. But that's how we handle things in our business, especially in the opinion industry. It's a zero-sum game. Somebody won, somebody lost. But in a situation like this, with such horrendous allegations, nuance has to be the goal. Because there's so much negativity to go around. Starting with Watson, who maintains his innocence. But the majority of the evidence, based on what we can all read in that ruling that was issued by federal judge Sue Robinson, indicates she did not believe his denials. In plain English, she thought he was not telling the truth. And there's the Browns. They're culpable as well. How about that statement from the Haslam family yesterday? I have read enough verbatim. I'm not going to do it anymore today. But they used the word triggered. Some people are going to be triggered by this news. You had months to craft that statement. That's the best you can come up with. But these are the people who were well aware of all these allegations. 24 lawsuits. New York Times reporting 66 different women contacted by Watson. Interested, he was, in massage therapy. They still gave him all that guaranteed money, $230 million fully guaranteed. And they enabled him by structuring the contract so he's only losing $345,000 this year for the six game checks. He's going to make $45 million this year, part of the signing bonus. That's untouchable. So this story has so many layers to it, but unfortunately, because of what we do in our business, I'm supposed to tell you who won and who lost. And I don't feel like doing that. Because I don't think it captures the essence of what's going on here. We don't know what occurred in those rooms between Deshaun Watson and the 24 accusers. But remember, only four of them were part of the league's investigation, and they related their experiences to Judge Sue Robinson. And in my opinion, I'm not Jacoby nor Myers. I don't have an 800 number. I'm not a lawyer. Judge Robinson tried to strike a balance between taking these allegations very seriously and following the letter of the personal conduct policy, and we keep getting back to this phrase, nonviolent. And the counter would be, and when the league appeals, which I think they will, they're going to point out that the judge and her finding, and I'll put it in plain English, thought that Watson was not truthful. He lied. She also wrote that his conduct was dangerous to the safety of others. Isn't that grounds for a suspension? That's called potentiality on a big word Tuesday. I don't have to punch you, but I can stand here with a fist in your face. And you can say that's not a crime. That's a threat. We're not in the courtroom. But that's the problem. The NFL is trying to create their own system of law enforcement that's inconsistent. Because if I bring up Jameis Winston and the Uber driver, well, that's one person, and that's one person too many, who had to deal with this abhorrent behavior. We know there are 24 lawsuits, but we don't know the legal outcome, other than they've been settled, 23 of them, because two grand juries refused to hand up an indictment. Watson has never been arrested, nor has he been charged with a crime. But we also know Ben Roethlisberger was never charged with anything. He got six games, knocked down to four. Same for Ezekiel Elliott. So this is not easy for those of us in these roles to react to and process. I'm doing my best to be comprehensive, understanding the serious nature of the allegations, but because my job is to tell you my opinion and what I think is going to happen, I think the league will, before Thursday's deadline, decide to appeal it. Then it goes to Goodell or a surrogate. And you know at that point, they're going to say six games is not enough. They'll bump it up to an entire season. And beyond the Haslam family, and the Packers have a different structure, they're publicly held, the other 30 owners personally and families who will get together behind closed doors will be high-fiving because they also want to stick it to Jimmy Haslam for changing the financial structure of the league, giving Watson all that guaranteed money. I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome. We have covered the more serious portion of the final hour of the program. Got time to have a little bit more of a lighthearted style coming up. 1-800-636-8686. I'll get to the college football. And in 20 minutes, we'll get more reaction to the breaking news in baseball. Juan Soto is on his way to the Padres. Up next, college football season starts in 3 weeks. Week zero coming up. So with renewed talk now of a 16-team playoff and all the consolidation, will this upcoming season be the last regular season that truly means something? I'm Brian Weber, in for Jim Rome. You're in the jungle here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
So what you saying? I'm Brian Weber, having a phenomenal time, as always, in for Jim Rome. If you can suffer through 3 hours of my deep, penetrating sports thoughts today, hopefully you can handle the burden when it comes your way tomorrow. I have been doing my best to get interactive with another phone call coming up at 1-800-636-8686. We will keep this block concise because I was in depth with my thoughts on the three big stories to kick off this final hour of the program. Juan Soto being dealt from the Nationals to the Padres. As we close in on baseball's trade deadline at 6 Eastern time, the Dolphins in what we're calling tanking. No, how about tampering gate? Tanking gate would have been so much better. Tampering gate with the league finding that they had impermissible conduct with Tom Brady going back to 2019 when he was under contract with the Patriots all the way through last year, and Sean Payton when he was still the head coach of the Saints, taking away next year's first-round draft pick, suspending team owner Stephen Ross through October 17 and fining the owner $1.5 million. And we continue to have reaction to the Deshaun Watson suspension. 6 games was the announcement yesterday. The league has until Thursday, 9 a.m. Eastern time, to decide whether or not to appeal. As promised, we're going back to the phone lines. Here is Curtis in Albuquerque. Hey, Curtis, you're on with Brian Weber. Hey, Brian. What's going on?
Hey, Brian. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
Okay, so I'm going to bring up an issue with the Watson case that I haven't heard anyone else talk about, mention or anything, is the fact that, you know, these women, you know, what is it, 23 out of the 24 have settled their case. And my point is, you know, they hired a lawyer, they stated their cases, they gave all their information, and then they settle. So what is that saying? Is that saying that, you know, Deshaun is admitting guilt and just wants it to go away, or the women, you know, you'd be naive. People would be naive to think that some of these aren't a money grab. They're just, I mean, you see one woman, well, I got $5 million. Well, okay, well, I'm going to tell this story and I'm going to say, I want my share. So I don't understand the logic of them settling if they wanted to take this and were so demonstrative in their cases.
Curtis, let me jump in. I appreciate the phone call. Again, I don't want to sound like I am, here's a current reference, part of the paper chase, going to Harvard Law School with John Houseman in 1978. I don't want to do legalese radio because I'm not a lawyer. I do my best to be fully aware of what's going on, and I read a lot. Let's just remember there's a distinction between civil cases, that's what we're talking about with the 24 accusers and 23 settlements, and the criminal side, which we understand that Watson now has had 2 grand juries in Texas decide not to hand up an indictment, and the threshold for an indictment is fairly low. There's the old cliche that a good district attorney can get a ham sandwich indicted. Not to say that the allegations aren't valid, that the allegations do not merit our attention, but if you're part of the Watson legal team led by Rusty Hardin, your argument would be he has not been charged with a single crime. There's nothing going on the criminal side. However, civilly, I will point out that Tony Busby is the attorney for the majority of the accusers. I think Watson's side would say, well, did this lawyer go out and solicit? You can't legally solicit. Did he go out and look for people who wanted to sue Deshaun Watson? I'll answer your question about the settlement, because if you're involved in any litigation and your goal with a civil lawsuit, a lawsuit, let's just speak English here, is to get paid. You can only get financial compensation in a civil matter. Well, what happens if you lose? You get zero. If you settle, at least you're guaranteed of getting something. And we don't know the terms because with the settlement typically comes a non-disclosure agreement. That is standard. We all have learned a lot about NDAs now in the Me Too era. So I understand the point you're making, Curtis. I'm not endorsing it in any way. I don't think any of this is a cash grab. I think we have enough evidence to find. And remember, in a civil situation, it's not beyond a reasonable doubt. It's preponderance, majority of the evidence, 51% versus 49. Would a reasonable person deduce that these accusations against Deshaun Watson are valid? My answer is yes. That's why I would support the league in going for the appeal and expanding the suspension to a full season. I think there's more than enough evidence in the court of public opinion. But for the purposes of the league's discussion, they narrowed their focus to four individuals who were willing to go through the process. And think about the pain and the mental anguish of these women. You want to relive one of the worst days of your life? I give them so much credit for having that kind of courage and bravery because they want to see Watson punished because the legal system on the criminal front is not doing anything. So unfortunately, the way it works in this country, if you're looking for some relief, that's the legal term, then you got to go through the civil process. And the only thing you're going to get there is money. You're not going to get those images in your mind removed. You're not going to be able to avoid one of the worst days of your life. So the reason this story is just so unseemly comes down to all of the accusers and all of the women who allegedly had to endure just terrible, horrendous conduct by Deshaun Watson. And that's, to me, one of the key takeaways, as I keep referring to my notes because I want to speak with specifics here, as we go back to what Judge Sue Robinson found in the document that, to the league's credit and the union's credit, was released, and you can read it for yourself, she found that Watson's conduct was egregious, predatory, and a danger to the safety of others. To me, that's grounds for a season-long suspension. The reason the judge did not arrive at that conclusion is there's no precedent because of the non-violent nature of the allegations, which shouldn't matter. And in the future, as we wrap it up here, I think the league will modify the personal conduct policy. Because effectively, in the past, Roger Goodell can do whatever he wants to. In the past. Now, we had this whole new system come out of the last collective bargaining agreement to go to an independent arbitrator. Still, the outcome could be the same. It's Goodell or his surrogate saying, thank you, Your Honor. Wonderful work. We disagree. And Watson's not playing football this year. Okay. I do appreciate the phone call, but I don't want in any way the word cash grab to slip by as endorsed or found to be valid by the host. That's the opinion of the caller. I disagree with it, but we allow people to speak their minds. It's a forum at 1-800-636-8686. Red, I know you're scoring at home, and I got to squeeze in a huge tweet with thoughts on what's going on in Washington. All right, I mentioned Harper, Scherzer, Turner, and now Soto all leaving D.C. Baseball Tim from Maryland points out Kyle Schwarber has also gone from the Nets to the Phillies. So Harper and Schwarber in that same division, watching the Nets hit rock bottom, rock bottom. I appreciate you being a fact checker. That'll be our huge tweet brought to you by Grainger for the ones who get it done. Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, 24/7 support, free access to product specialists and experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. I am now 0-3. I got to get off the schneid. I will actually live up to my forward promotion. So far, I've talked about, here's what's coming up. Who's going to go from worst to first in the NFL? The balance of power amongst quarterbacks in the rugged AFC West. I had college football thoughts that were profound. And I do have the paperwork to back it up. You can come to my one-bedroom apartment and try to read my terrible handwriting. Here's a preview. You might hear some of those topics tomorrow because we believe in being environmentally conscious. No recycling, of course. This will live up to our expectations. We're talking baseball to wrap up the program with Juan Soto getting set to land in San Diego. How does this blockbuster move shake up the National League, not only this year in the postseason, but for the next few years with free agency, not a possibility for the young star for a couple more years. We'll cover it all with Joe Sheehan from the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter at joesheehan.com. Now it's time for a sports update. Belatedly, let's get it there quickly to the great Rich Ackerman. Brian Weber back with you. We are winding down. That means we're warming up for tomorrow's program. Going back to back, always savor every opportunity to be in for Jim. Tomorrow we'll have more of the fallout from what's already happened today across Major League Baseball with the trade deadline approaching at 6 Eastern for analysis of the blockbuster move with Juan Soto. Going from Washington to San Diego, let's say hello to one of the best in the business, Joe Sheehan. Check out his fine work at joesheehan.com and the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter. Joe, how are you?
Busy day, man. Busy day, exciting day. Maybe the biggest trade we've ever seen in at the trade deadline. Just a huge day, Brian.
You just answered the question I did not even have a chance to articulate. So I was riffing off the top of my head. I can't think of a larger deal to occur on deadline day, so let's just make it official. Do you think this is the most impactful trade we've seen in the run-up to a trade deadline? And for casual fans, this is it. We're not even in the old days of the non-waiver trade deadline. Everything comes to a halt later on today.
Brian, I'm sorry. Can you repeat that?
Sure, Joe. Is this the most impactful deadline deal that we've seen coming up just prior to the trade deadline?
Yeah, I think you look at maybe the Manny Ramirez trade the Dodgers pulled off one time. You've got the Verlander trade was a waiver trade. The Mark Teixeira trade is the one I keep coming back to, where the Rangers traded Teixeira to the Braves and got a bunch of guys who ended up contributing to two pennant winners. So those are the ones that come to mind in more recent memory. Remember, you go back to the 1970s, the trade deadline used to be June 15th, and Mets fans will talk about Tom Seaver. They traded away Tom Seaver to the Reds when he was still at the peak of his powers. They couldn't get him signed. That's something I think that older fans will always relate to.
I remember I cried as a youth growing up in the suburbs of New York City at the age of 8 when Tom Seaver had to get in that limousine and head on his way to Cincinnati. We're talking baseball with Joe Sheehan from joesheehan.com. Joe, just from a big picture perspective, with Soto on his way to the Padres, if the Padres are a wild card team, how does the addition of Soto change how things could play out in the National League playoffs?
The Dodgers have had their issues. Certainly the bottom of the lineup hitting for very low averages. Guys like Muncy, Bellinger. It looks like they're about to trade for Joey Gallo just to complete that set. They've had some pitching injuries as well. I'm still not sure that the Padres can catch the Dodgers. The Dodgers are the best team in baseball, even with all the problems that they've had. The Padres will lock up, in all likelihood, that number 4 seed. It'll get them home field advantage now in the new setup. They'll have home field advantage and a best-of-3 wild card. All 3 games will be played at Petco Park. It's a huge upgrade for them in the outfield where they've really struggled. Will Myers has been hurt. Trent Grisham hasn't been all that effective. You know, they've got a good bounce-back year from Jerickson Profar. But, I mean, Soto is just a massive, massive upgrade. Talking about a player who is going to be one of the best hitters in the league every year, and even over the course of 2 months, makes you 2 to 3 wins better.
And, Joe, for casual fans who understand the appeal of Soto, and we saw him on a national stage, and what he was able to achieve at Home Run Derby, beyond the counting numbers, and you're great in giving us context that most of us can relate to, what makes him so special at the age of 23?
The mature approach at the plate is the big thing. Juan Soto has walk rates in a young player that we've only seen in a few guys in baseball history. I mentioned Williams earlier. You look at Mel Ott being another example. These are Hall of Famers. Pretty much every single comp for Juan Soto is not just a fringe Hall of Famer, but an inner circle Hall of Famer. You pull back out. You know, the last time a player like this was traded would be maybe Miguel Cabrera, who was traded at the age of 24. You go back 100 years, you have the Babe Ruth trade. Ruth was 25 at the time of that deal. These are the hitters Soto is compared to. He's great power, preternatural plate discipline, which he's had since he came up as a 20-year-old rookie. And that kind of combination in a young player is incredibly powerful. He's still kind of coming into his game, too. I think there's some more power in there that can be unlocked. He can be a 45, 50 homer hitter at his peak.
Baseball's trade deadline coming up at 6 Eastern. We're taking around the bigs with Joe Sheehan of JoeSheehan.com. Joe, you've seen the reports that the Angels at least listened to offers for Shohei Ohtani. Apparently, he's not going to move. But with Ohtani heading into free agency at the end of next season, that's a walk year, should the Angels be open to flipping him into capital coming back? Because if he is true to his word, and he wants to play for a winning franchise, it doesn't look like it's going to be the Angels anytime soon.
No, I don't think there's a chance that Ohtani starts next year with the Angels, which is going to be a tough end to this story. It's a tough trade to throw together in midseason. Ohtani's a bit of a unicorn. Integrating him into a new team at midseason is hard because you have to go to a six-man rotation, and whoever was your DH completely loses playing time. There are difficulties there. But if you look at the two of the 2023 Angels, they're running it back again. Maybe Rendon will be healthy, but they still don't have enough pitching, and they still don't have enough talent in the lineup around Trout and Ohtani. If you know Ohtani's leaving at the end of 23, and I don't see any reason why he stays in Anaheim, you have to trade him to get value, because you should be able to get a lot of value for Ohtani. He's obviously, you know, one of the, not just one of the best players, Brian, but one of the most marketable players in the game. I don't think the Angels... teams have proven they can't win with Ohtani and Trout. They've got to try a different plan.
That sums it up perfectly. I'm Brian Weber in for Jim Rome, talking baseball with Joe Sheehan of the Joe Sheehan Baseball Newsletter at JoeSheehan.com. Well, of course, when the speculation begins, Ohtani inevitably will be a Yankee. Let's focus on this year's edition of what's going on in the Bronx. Yanks as a team, wobbly since the All-Star break, roughly a 500, but Aaron Judge remains locked in. Hit home run number 43 last night. Joe, the last time we chatted, you brought something up, and I thought more about it, so I'd love your perspective in detail. With Judge being 6'7", what's the dilemma then for umpires to come up with a fair strike zone? Because it seems like he deals with a ton of low strikes that he can't get to physically.
Right. That's been a problem his whole career. There were some stats. I want to say the Fox broadcast had some really good stats on Judge having more missed calls against him called strikes and more low pitches against him called strikes than anybody in the game since he's been in the league. And, you know, the frustration builds both with Judge and, you know, Aaron Boone's talked about it a lot. That's a short-term concern. Hopefully we go to an automated ball and strike calling system in the next couple of years and that goes away. But long-term, that height issue, you know, we've talked about this in the past. There are just very few examples of players 6'6 and above having longevity. It's basically Dave Winfield and a couple of years for Frank Howard, and that's it. So that's the concern in signing Judge, who, because he was drafted out of college, wasn't a rookie until he was age 25, hits the market at 31. You've seen his peak seasons. Now, that's not saying that Judge is going to collapse at 32 or 33. But if you're looking at a seven-year deal, $35, $40 million a year, there is a lot of risk on the back end of a contract like that.
Joe, I know it's a busy day for you, so I appreciate you taking the time. As we say goodbye, you always bring me back to my youth as a baseball fan in the late 1970s. Was the man who traded Tom Seaver M. Donald Grant?
Well, he was the owner at the time. I'm not sure who the GM was for the Mets.
Yeah, but he was the fall guy. The Post killed him. I remember that.
Yes, yes. You mentioned crying. For me, it was Chris Chambliss when the Yankees traded Chris Chambliss 2 years later. I was 8 years old, and Jerry Girard made me cry.
Who was one of the driest and most sarcastic sportscasters on WPIX, Picks in the history of our business. Joe, I appreciate you spinning back the clock. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.
Joe Sheehan. All right, we talk about stars in New York being exiled, because it's all about New York, right? Taking me 30 years to lose the accent. That's why I enunciate so much and clutch this microphone. Although somebody was killing me the other day, and I am aware, the soft A, orange, is hard. So now I say orange. Saturday. Do I say college oddly? Someone was like, hey, buddy, it's not spelled C-A-W-L. Half of my work is in college sports. While the lights are still on at Pac-12 Network, I'm getting ready to do volleyball and soccer. Have I been mispronouncing the foundation of my career? Breaking news. Joe, terrific analysis, especially for those of you who don't follow baseball the way you used to. Soto is the real deal, and he's been liberated. The bank is open on a Saturday. He's been liberated from Washington.
The bank is open on a Saturday.
That's our huge call. Man, I am annoying. Brought to you by Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry. 24/7 support. Free access to product specialist, experienced staff at over 250 local branches. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. I want to thank our guests, just two of them today. And that worked out well because we had so much breaking news. Joe Sheehan talking baseball with a deadline coming up later today. And NFL analysis provided by Josh Alper of ProFootballTalk.com. Well, I have 75% of my rundown I did not get to. So guess who's going out tonight, kids? B-Webb letting loose on the Sunset Strip. Hey, Ritt, I might need your help. You come pick me up. I'll just come right out of the Mondrian around 4 a.m. We'll carpool. Tomorrow's my Friday, after all. I don't get paid. It's an internship. Thanks to Jim Rome, Craig Kitchen, Spike Eskin, David Murnak, all the terrific people at CBS Sports Radio, and the television production team, CBS Sports Network. Garrett actually worked today. Alvin is brilliant as always. My name is Brian Weber. Having a blast in for Jim Rome. And we'll do it again tomorrow right here on CBS Sports Radio.